Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Okay, welcome along to the podcast equivalent of setting your alarm an hour early before school. So you get up, you get dressed, and then you fit some GTA, some Final Fantasy, a bit of Assassin's Creed in before you get on the bus. It's also the podcast equivalent of maybe staying up late to do just one more run of Balatro or Blue Prince or Vampire Survivors, and then next thing you know, it's 3 a.m. This is Press X to Continue, and a very warm welcome to you to the podcast. Welcome along to the Continue Club. Lovely to have you with us. My name is Stefan. This is Einel. Einel, someone's episode is their first episode, and this could be that, isn't it? So I think you should explain what the hell we're doing here. What's going on?
Well, this is the place for where, whether you love video games, whether you're new to video games, doesn't matter. We're here to discuss our fun times that can be had with the genre and also some of the nitty-gritties of the industry as well to keep you guys up to date.
Absolutely. We had some fun, didn't we, playing Overcooked 2 on our live stream this week. And actually, we didn't fall out. We haven't had a press divorce. No arguments.
Didn't chat each other once.
I was going to say, you guys look quite chipper for a long Overcooked stream. You seem pretty good terms.
If anything, our bond has grown.
It's tighter. It's tighter, James.
Plus two.
No, that is James Briefel. We have leveled up. You're right. That's James Briefel, who's with us this week. James, lovely to have you on, making your Press X to Continue debut.
Oh, I'm honoured. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to jump in.
You probably know James' work, but just in case you don't, of course, he's the presenter, podcaster from Pulp Kitchen. They do loads of brilliant film reviews. You should check out their page. So I get all my info in the movie world now, James, because children, I don't get to go to the cinema much anymore. So you're basically keeping me informed on everything I need to know.
happy to provide.
Yeah, very good. We've also got the king of the XE Beasts, an OG Press Xer, back in the building. It is Glenn Moore. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Stefan, Einel. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, for people watching this on YouTube or on Spotify, you can see that Glenn is doing some al fresco podcasting, Glenn. And I tell you what, I wish I was doing the same because I'm sweating my tits off in here. And so that looks far more comfortable where you are in your lovely garden.
And so, yeah, I've got a webcam set up on a watering can. The setup is, if you can see the back of this looks shit. But as it stands, this could be green screen as far as I'm concerned.
Actually, didn't think about that. I say, you don't know what's real these days.
Now, he's James, actually in a bunker.
Yeah, it's not real. Yeah. He's getting ready for AI to take over the world. Now, of course, we have our big discussion to have before we get into the sort of meat of the podcast with you, James. As this is your debut with us on Press X, you've got a big choice to make, and that is, do you want to be a member of the Continue Club? Frankie Ward is the queen of the Continue Club. She's not here to make the case for you, but you could be in the Continue Club. Or do you want to be an XE Beast? And happens to be, by coincidence, we have the king of the XE Beasts, the inventor of that title, Glenn Moore, with us. Glenn, why should James be an XE Beast as opposed to a Continue Clubber?
I think it depends on how much you enjoy the work of Ray Winston and Ben Kingsley, as well as video games. It's like it hinges on that.
I see.
So you're
very specific.
Yeah. Putting you on the spot early doors here, James.
Are you a big fan of his films, sort of, or are you perhaps got a big gambling addiction and occasionally Ray Winston's enormous head bursts into your living room to convince you to build a throne?
Is this just a sort of vibe check on two different ways of life and living?
Yeah. We're making judgments on you immediately here on the podcast.
Yeah,
it's like when you play a video game and they force you to make a huge choice right off the bat without any kind of background.
No context. No context.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make any enemies of the people sort of in the podcast right now. I'm going to have to align with the XE Beasts. I'll get my tattoo this afternoon.
Very good.
Yes,
good.
Yes, there we
Fantastic.
Go.
Fantastic. Another member of the XE Beasts there. Glenn is clearly very happy. Good stuff. Right. So we're kicking off with an unsung hero. This is where we pick a game that basically we think hasn't had enough pop, enough love over the years and deserves a moment in the sun. So Glenn, you're choosing our unsung hero game this week. I've got a list of them actually, didn't we? DW in the Discord made a list of all the unsung hero games. So I'll get them up now. What are you choosing, Glenn?
I'm choosing a game called Fort Solis, and I'm choosing it. This might be a bit of a controversial choice in that I don't think this game is amazing, but I think it was really unfairly treated. This game came out in 2021. It's a space walking sim set on Mars. It features the voices of Roger Clark, who is, of course, Arthur Morgan in Red Dead Redemption 2. Yeah. Troy Baker, who is the voice of every single video game character ever, apart from Mario. And it is your classic sci-fi semi-horror tale of a distress signal being sent out from a moon colony. Think Aliens. You arrive at said moon colony. It's completely abandoned. And you're then just sort of making your way through. So the gameplay mechanics are just walking through an environment, very, very light puzzle solving, but ultimately just playing almost like a sort of a theater installation where the action is happening around you and you're just walking through. I like those sort of, walking sim always sounds a bit pejorative. And I like to sort of see it as like a tourism sort of game, you know, where you just, you have a tour guide sort of showing you around an environment. The only reason I mention it really is because I played it a couple of years ago. As I said, it came out in 2021. I think it's a real 7 out of 10 game, but the reviews were really quite harsh on it, I thought. I think video game reviews in general tend to be pretty positive, more so in comparison to movies. If you look at movies on like Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic, even just you look at something like Happy Gilmore and it will have something like 27% rating. And you go, well, obviously that's not true. And whereas I think we still see video games as a complete miracle. The very idea that it got made usually elevates something above a 6 out of 10. And as a result, because there are so many games that are reviewed so highly every year, you tend to, if you're someone who likes to check the reviews before you buy something, you tend to go for like an 8, 9 out of 10. Or 10 out of 10, and you're less likely to pick up something like a 7 because it's a bit of a risk. On Metacritic, Fort Solis is only at 60, which really marks it as like, well, that's one of the worst games of the year it came out. Yeah. And that just isn't true. The game is perfectly fine. And if you like walking sims like I do and are perfectly happy to dip your toe into whichever new one comes out, then Fort Solis is absolutely worth checking out.
I think I seem to remember that because of the setting, like you said, a sort of space Mars based walking, wasn't there? I think Fort Solis lost a lot of pop at the time because it came out alongside another sort of space based but more horror title. Well, I cannot remember what
well
was
I, I don't know if you're thinking about when Dead Space and Callisto Protocol came out at the same time.
Yeah, so
that Dead might Space, be what you're thinking,
because I think they were all 2023. Callisto Protocol, that's it, Dead Space and Fort Solis. And I think
Fort Solis, yeah,
and I think it lost a bit of, because I know it's daft, like they're different games, but the aesthetic was enough that it put people off.
Callisto Protocol was like a spiritual successor to Dead Space. And then obviously Dead Space Remake comes out and blows it out the water. And now I think Callisto Protocol is a bad game, but to give a second unsung hero, did you know they made a spin-off of the Callisto Protocol a couple of years ago, which is basically Hades? They made a cartoony, cel-shaded comedy roguelite set in the Callisto Protocol, like spaceship base, whatever, prison. It was a prison. And you're rushing to get to the last escape pod. And it's called Redacted. The game is called Redacted. It is an absolute blast. If you're a fan of Hades, it's so much fun. It's really, really good. But again, didn't get a huge amount of traction at the time.
I mean, that's a great cast, Daniel, isn't it? I mean, come on, Roger Clark, Troy Baker.
I played it and you can finish it in about 3 hours, which is fantastic.
Have it walking sometime.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You should have opened with that. I'm writing that down.
Do you know
right
the thing
now.
Is, like, I enjoyed it once I knew what it was. Because you go in and it has the visuals are incredible. Mm. The graphic fidelity is amazing. But it feels like at some point, oh, you're going to get some sort of weapon or the game mechanics are going to change. No, you're just walking the entire time. And when you realize, oh, I don't have any buttons to defend myself or do any kind of action-y things, you realize, oh, it's immersive experience rather than an actual action game. But it feels like it should be an action game.
Absolutely spot on. I think that's the issue. It looks so familiar. And you go, well, I already know. I'm already getting ready to aim with L2 and shoot with R2. And then once the moment you realize there's going to be no combat, you go, oh, I guess it's a puzzler like Deliver Us the Moon. And not that either. You've got to get right in the middle. It's just walking.
Did you play Death Stranding, James, which is some people described also as a walking simulator, but it had a lot more going to it.
That's more literally a walking simulator because you're physically trying to walk and do
Absolutely.
Stuff. I couldn't really get into Death Stranding, weirdly. And yeah. I wonder if it's because I consume so many films. I just really struggle to understand, like, but what is this and why is this interesting? And if this was actually a TV show or a film, like, would it be good? I've really struggled. I've watched like a bunch of hours of other people playing it and I just could yeah. never quite connect. But it's interesting, like this concept of something being a walking simulator. I've always kind of associated that comment as like an insult to the game, like it's just a walking simulator without actually being like a game where you're trying to figure out how to walk. But yeah. that sounds great. I love the idea of just sort of like, as long as you understand what you're going in for, challenging the way people are expected to play games and not just assuming that you're going to be jumping and shooting and punching your way out. I think there should be more space for that. But no, do you know what? I really tried with Death Stranding. The sequel also looked great. I know there's people who absolutely swear by it and think it's great. I've always struggled to grasp what Hideo Kojima is trying to communicate, and I have tried. Cinematically, I look at the cast, I'm like, this is as good a cast as you would want for any great film, but yeah. like, I just fundamentally don't really want to give up sort of like 20 to 30 hours of my time for something that just looks bonkers.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal game, and it would be an absolutely embarrassing film. It would be humiliating. Yeah. In terms of walking, if people are reticent about walking sims, Firewatch and What Remains of Edith Finch are the yep. best. They're the best examples and the best way to introduce people into that genre, because straight away you know, just from the setting, the visuals, the dialogue, you go, this is, I can already sense I'm just going to be walking, and that's all it is. And it's yeah. those games are fantastic. Those are the
Firewatch
best.
You can do in a night. Firewatch you yeah. can do in about 5-6 hours, and the voice acting is incredible. In fact, it was BAFTA winning voice acting, wasn't it, Einel, in Firewatch, if I remember rightly.
So. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And just on Death Stranding, I remember watching the trailer, sorry, when those first amazing trailers started coming out, I was so excited to play it. And I thought what they did cinematically with the trailers was the most impressive thing I've ever seen. And then I saw gameplay for the first time and I was really just like, wait, so it's sort of like a backpack hiking thing, which yeah, I know isn't what everything the game is, but I just sort of really struggled to grasp onto it. Despite having said, I think we should challenge players to play games differently.
And Fort Solace sounds like one of those playing games differently sort of vibes, isn't it? And you know what? You've nailed the unsung hero brief there, Glenn. Because Thank I you. Don't think we've had any mention of Fort Solace on the podcast, and we've done over 100 episodes now. Mm-hmm. So that is well done. You know, I mean, that's
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah, well done. That is good. That's good. And to be fair, not all the games in this list. I mean, my suggestion was Cricket Captain, which is a pretty shit game. So, like, you know, it doesn't matter if it's good or not. Very good. We've had this suggestion in the Discord. Big Toe's been on to say, I have two unsung hero games I think that get forgotten because of Medal of Honor and then Call of Duty, which took over. The first one is Conflict Desert Storm.
Storm!
What a game! Big Toe! Yes! Team-based tactical shooter based in the Iraqi and the first Gulf Wars in the early 90s. That was Conflict Desert Storm and SOCOM. Remember SOCOM?
Yeah, it's SOCOM as well. Full Spectrum Warrior, that whole kind of...
The nice thing about Conflict Desert Storm, you sort of had like, here's your sniper, here's your munitions guy, and you would basically set them up around a base and then the proper conflict would then happen. It was just a really nice... It was like, it was basically playing as a team, but you were individually controlling all of them sort of one at a time. Am I right in thinking that? I remember playing the demo.
Yeah. It was great. Conflict Desert Storm was really good. And Big Toe also suggests Black, which was a first-person shooter on the PS2. Yes. I can't remember Black.
It came at the end of like the PS2 and it came out on Xbox as well.
You can play it on Game Pass.
Graphically, it was really good.
Oh, cool box.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, you can, yeah.
There we are. And we've got a tick for the box app from James Big Toe. So that is good stuff. Keep your suggestions and thoughts coming in the Discord. Thank you very much for all of those. Your unsung hero games.
Good one, that one. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Press X to Continue is proudly sponsored by you. That is right. If you want more Press X content, then hop over to our socials and see how you can support us and see how you can help us keep the content coming out. You can access live streams, bonus episodes, behind the scenes content, and even, if you're feeling fancy, some Press X to Continue merch. Right, James, because you review things for a living, we thought we'd have you on to review some stuff, which is very good. So James is going to be giving us a review of the Assassin's Creed Black Flag remaster very soon. But before we get into that, we have to have some trivia. Now, the way this works is you can put your questions into the Discord. There is a secret channel in the Discord for people to put their trivia questions in. And you don't even have to be a question. It can just be like a fact. And then our lovely production team will turn it in to a question for you. And this week, the question is inspired by PHX Renegade in the Discord. PHX, thank you very much for your question.
Who wants to be a continuer?
Why is it ironic that Psyjonis, the developers of the game Lemmings, were sued for their use of the song How Much Is That Doggy in the Window when they made the game soundtrack? So they were sued for using that song when they made the soundtrack, and it's ironic for some reason. Why? Any guesses? I have got nothing for you.
Oh.
I've got nothing for you.
False advertising?
Yeah. Could be false advertising.
Anything to do with the waggling tail here.
Yeah.
Any clue which Lemming game this is in response to? Or is it just talking about the developer rather than...
The original Lemmings. So they used that in the game soundtrack and they were sealed. We'll come back to the answers later on the podcast. Yes, Andy No has come up with our leaderboard. He does the algorithm, so it doesn't really matter how many questions you've answered. Keza McDonald is still number one. She should be. She's the Guardian's games editor. She should be number one. That's fine. Einel's in fourth. I'm in third. Glenn, you're quite down at the moment, but that could all change with a correct answer or two over the next couple of weeks.
All right.
Don't panic. We will come back to that at the end of the episode.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, how much is that dog in the window? Why was that important? Don't know. Right. Okay, moving on then. We talked a bit about this with our GTA episode recently. The end of the physical disc in the game space is upon us. PlayStation are going to stop releasing games on discs from January 2028. James, how do you feel about this? Do you care about physical media?
Yeah, I thought it was really strange the way that Sony announced this. So the answer is, I think I do care about digital media, but I've kind of been all digital since sort of like very early in the PS4 generation. So I was the one that bought a digital PS5 when it came out. I was like, cool, you're going to save me, what, like 75 quid on a console? Yeah. All my stuff is digital anyway. I just think it's really strange that they were the ones that have now been this like horrible corporation to draw this line under the sand and basically say, that's it, you know, we're no longer going to print physical media. But if the numbers are as they've been reported at sort of this week in reaction to news, from what I understand, I think the vast majority now of game sales have been digital for a while. And the discs that we talk about as you know, being this like storage form to preserve games forever, they've not always been, I think, for a long time, the perfect way to store physical media. Like, there are many games where the disc really just acts as sort of a digital key that is more of like a handshake between the disc and the PlayStation Store. You then have to download it from the PlayStation Store for a lot of instances. Yeah. So it's not like, I don't want us to pretend that this is like vinyl or this is like a Blu-ray where like it's a perfect offline storage form for game discs. I believe that there should be a way that we can store games without needing to like interface with these digital storefronts. But I'm almost slightly like, let's remember that the way that we currently have it isn't perfect. And so also like our relationship between digital and physical purchases is very strange. So like on the games, and we're quite like protective of it, but also nobody's asking for like a physical version of Angry Birds from the iPhone 3GS in 2008. Like, we're very happy for that to live like on a sort of digital storefront. I cynically kind of think that this is them just sort of breaking the bad news that the PlayStation 6 isn't going to have a disc drive, and they'd rather we reacted to that bad news now, especially when they announced that the PS6 is going to be like probably $1,000 based on the way in which prices are going right now. I'm sure a Blu-ray drive will be available, but it will be done separately. But if the numbers are as low as they are, why would they not just slowly sunset physical games, have it be bought by people who are really passionate about it? I don't know why they need to draw this line in the sand and be like, that's it, we're done. Like, you've got another year and a half of this. I think it's quite strange.
Yeah. What do you make of it, Einel? I'm a bit, I'm sort of, I see, I, a bit, I don't know. I don't know what I think of it, really.
I think James is right in terms of, I think people were surprised because Blu-ray is Sony's technology. So we would have thought Microsoft would be the first to go out before Sony. But do you know what I really think? I don't think we're the target audience anymore. And I think that's what this is showing, because all of us 20, like we've been gaming for like 10, 20, 30, 40 years plus. We all remember the days of physical games, swapping for games with friends, going Blockbuster Video, renting games, and like and having like the full physical carts on display on your walls and things like that. But then I look at the young generation now, most of them don't have any physical releases of their games. And like the young people that I've interacted with in terms of gaming, they don't have like physical collections like we do. And so we're not that, Sony is saying, we're not targeting you anymore.
Yeah. It's happened in music, right, Glenn? Like James is saying, you know, I know there's been a bit of a vinyl revival, but I can't remember the last time I bought an album on CD.
It's weird. I've actually recently, in the last couple of years, really started buying physical copies of games. This was partly because I think when I got an Xbox, I'd been PlayStation and Nintendo my whole life, and I got an Xbox a couple of years ago, and Xbox isn't having the best time at the moment, but one thing that is really impressive about it is the level of backwards compatibility that you can put in a disc from an Xbox 360 game. I think even some original Xbox games and play them. And it's been really nice to be like, okay, yeah, let's, now that the new one's been canceled, let's play Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. Never got around to playing that. Never got around to playing Condemned Criminal Origins. And that's been really, really nice. And I think as well, digital releases are so expensive and the disc ones tend to be cheaper. And if you're really thrifty, then the nice thing about buying discs is if you think you're never going to replay a game, you buy it, play it, list it on eBay. Then, you know,
yeah, but like, I think that the secondary games market,
it's a good money saving sort of technique. I do have to say, and this is again where Xbox falls behind PlayStation and Nintendo, is that Nintendo's first party releases never go down in price. I've been scouring eBay for months waiting for Pikmin 4 to drop below about £30 and it won't. And Breath of the Wild, which has been out for nearly a decade, is still so expensive. But their third party releases, the amount of sales that Nintendo has are absolutely astonishing. PlayStation as well. You can get games for so cheap digitally. The only worry I have is, like PlayStation did with one of the Little Big Planet games a couple of years ago, it just gets delisted. And the idea that you might own a game and actually now you can't load it. This happened with a bunch of movies that people had bought from Sony and they suddenly stopped working.
Yeah,
that's the only worry of not being able to own.
Yeah, the control has gone out of the hands, and you see, look, this argument, the control has gone out of the hand of the consumers into the hands of the creators, right?
Do you know what it is? They haven't listed any benefits to going digital, like, other than like having the convenience of it, which is inherent with it. Like, why go all digital? Like they haven't done the homework. They haven't set up like ways in which sharing games is easier. Like Nintendo got the virtual games things, but it's so cumbersome and really hard and difficult to share games.
I love that.
It's great, but like, it's hard to do it. You have to have your Switch next to each other and then they have to bump and kiss. It takes about 30 seconds and then it initiates. And then it's like, what the? It's too slow. It's really cumbersome. Like, digital game like sharing should be easy. It's just like, hey, you can borrow this game for a week. Boom, there you go, you got it.
Yeah.
I think they haven't introduced anything like that.
I think that's it, because the secondary, what I worry about this is, there was a joy, if you were a bit hard up or in university, didn't have loads of cash or whatever, and I could walk into a CX or similar and pick up something for a fiver. And you can do that to an extent with like digital sales. Or sometimes I would have something and my mate on the corner would have, I can remember swapping Devil May Cry for a Pro Evo or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Back in the day. And you could swap back and forth, and you just can't do that with digital ownership as things currently stand. And I think that is a problem, because I think that can price people out of the market. I know they're not thinking about that, but accessibility to this stuff shouldn't be down to how much cash you've got.
I sort of believe that these companies, like you said, Glenn, the way that Xbox has done it really well, I think these companies should have a duty to basically allow physical media to be played on the hardware for seemingly forever. Like, I don't know who's going to police that, but I really hope that PlayStation always does support a disc drive that you can whack into the newer PlayStation and play your games, which sounds like a really obvious choice, but I don't know who is this,
the biggest
like wider
cheer, James. I can remember this, right? The biggest cheer I've ever witnessed in a gaming environment. I was at a big gaming conference in LA, and they were showing off the new Xbox for the first time.
Yeah.
And they weren't even, people were, oh, new Halo, oh, exciting, lovely, yay. And then they said backwards compatible with all Xboxes. The place went nuts. And so
there is obviously how to share a game thing on PlayStation.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, but I think, I mean, our producer Dave's been on just saying we got old, and I think he's right. Like, we have got.
That's what I said. Like, we're not the target audience.
We're not the target
audience,
but I think there's got to be a way of being able to share your shit digitally. Yeah, I'm sorry.
They just need to get their act together before they say we're getting rid of physical. They need to bump up digital benefits way more than they are, because like half the games on my shelf, you can't even play digital anymore. And it's like one of my favorite games of all time, Outrun 2. You can't buy it digitally. You can't. Mm. You have to either pirate it somewhere or you have to have a physical copy. And if there's nowhere, and if there's like games like that in the future where they're just going to disappear, I hate that. Like, I go back to like the original like iPhone and Android phones, where there used to be so many games we used to play. Most of those games you can't play anymore. They're not on the store. They've been delisted. So how do you play them? Unless you have an old iPhone or an old Android, they're gone.
In the world of movies right now, like, you know, people are buying fewer and fewer Blu-rays, but lots of people still do. But it's very much now the expectation that would you want to watch a film at home, you're probably more likely to find it on a streaming service or buy it on Prime or whatever. But it would be really strange if Warner Brothers or Universal announced tomorrow, because of cost saving, we're not making Blu-ray discs of our film releases anymore, which is really strange. Like, that would be a really strange move when, like, you can just print as many DVDs that you think the demand has. And if it goes down, you just slowly make less. It would be really strange of one of the major movie distributors to be like, it's too expensive. We don't want to.
Yeah,
we don't
I guess pay for they, it. They don't have to make the DVD player though, right?
True.
And I guess if PlayStation, like you alluded to earlier, James, I guess they're thinking that PS6, Glenn, ain't going to be no disc drive in that. That's going to be digital only.
But I guess like PC players have been dealing with this for a long, long time. When was the last time you bought a physical PC game? I think my last one was probably Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah, great game. But I would say that
I still got the thing.
PC.
Come to
DVD. From 2002.
Come on, pristine.
Wow, I played the remastered version a couple of months ago on Switch. It holds up as a game. It holds up.
But I will say that I think the people who tend to play PC games, and feel free to shoot me down here, tend to be a bit more into the scene, if we will, or like, you know, there's more choice.
They can buy it from Steam, they can buy it from GOG, they can buy it from like EA, they can buy it from Ubisoft.
But you've got to be quite like, it is a bit more of a it's a bit more faffy than, I've got a 15-year-old who loves video games. I can go and buy the latest FIFA, give him a disc, he can shove it in or she can shove it in and play it, and that's the end of that. I don't have to worry about it. Whereas there's a lot of admin and maintenance now involved in gaming. Like, tech admin is taking over our lives, full stop. You try getting into a bank, don't get me started. And now it's the same with game. I can't just turn on the PlayStation and play anymore. You've got to download the new update. You know, all that crap. Those barriers to entry just keep getting higher and higher and higher.
I don't really mind the discless thing as much as other people, because I think it's like, well, this is the people it's harming are like sort of collectors more than anything else, and kind of the point of collecting is that it is a niche, that you're doing the thing that not everyone else is doing. The only thing I think it's really going to affect is gift giving. Like, I love to buy people games for Christmas, and it's a shame that you can't, like, I don't mind if they kept doing the, I mean, I haven't encountered yet the thing that GTA is going to do, which is the empty box and there's a code inside. The closest I've come to it was the Square Enix game, The Adventures of Elliot, that came out a few weeks ago. That had a cartridge in that then once you put it, there was nothing on the cartridge. Once you put the cartridge in, then downloaded the game from the internet. And that's always bullshit. But it was nice to have the physical copy. It's nice to give someone that. And this, actually, yeah, by giving someone
handing someone something like swapping books, or like, here's something that changed that really affected me, I think you'd enjoy it. You're going to give them a gift card to redeem something on the store. It's not the same.
Yeah, I was trying to buy someone a game on Steam for Christmas last year, and it was like, well, no, he needed to accept me as a friend first, and it was
and then you got to wait multiple days.
That's genuinely the only thing I think is the real shame of it, which is, which, you know, isn't world changing, but it's. It's that. Well, that is sad. It's
that, and plus most of the, you're hearing so many reports of people's accounts getting hacked and closed down, and all their games are tied to it. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
What if you had like 20, 30 years worth of games on an account, and then they're just gone one day? It just takes one person to just get into your Steam account.
My N64 thing is still in the attic somewhere. Well, look, let us know what you think. I mean, people have been chatting about this a little bit in the Discord already, but keep the conversation going or react to this on social media or whatever. You know what to do. We'd love to hear your thoughts on it. We can reflect on that next time we get together. Now, as you might have seen, we have recently launched a Patreon here on Press X to Continue. We love making the show. There's a lot of work that goes into it behind the scenes. And so we want to keep being able to bring you the best stuff that we can and keep the lights going. And so if you want to get involved and support that, then we would love it. Nothing is going to change, though. If you're not in a position to do that, don't worry. There's still going to be free episodes of Press X every Tuesday. But if you want more, if you want some of our top five episodes, if you want live streams.
There's some good top fives.
There's some good top fives in there. I'm a bit stressed about the one that we're recording today, actually, because there are so many options. So our top five episodes, our live streams, are all through our Patreon. You can go and find it. There's links all over our social media, all that stuff. We would love to have you in the Patreon lounge for more of our extras. We did an Overcooked 2, didn't we, this week for our live stream. And like Aina said, we are back stronger, if anything.
Stronger. Listen, our relationship has leveled up bounds. You know when you play those RPGs, you did a big battle, just beat a boss, and it just goes ring, 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 and it's like you're unlocking bear stuff. That's what it was
like. That was it, yeah, because James, before starting that, I reminded Ainel of my producer on the radio show I do in the morning of our live stream, said the last person he knew that played Overcooked with someone important to him ended up splitting up from his missus. So there was pressure going in.
There was pressure.
It should have a cigarette-style warning label on the front, like I think, with photos of couples not very happy with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. But we made it.
This could be you.
Right, okay, it is time for a review then. James, you are up. It is always a nice way to christen someone into the Press X fold by asking them to review a game for us. You're going to be talking about Assassin's Creed Black Flag Resynced.
Yeah, so I just sort of jumped into it this weekend, and I think I saw the announcement of it and I got really excited by it. I think my history with Assassin's Creed, like I think a lot of people, has been a series of ups and downs. Like I obviously fell in love with the first few, and Assassin's Creed 2 I still think is the best. Loved the Ezio trilogy, even though it got a bit tired. And into Black Flag, I thought it was great. And I think they lost me when they went super duper open world 100-hour RPG. I really, really tried with the games like Origin. I did a little bit with Odyssey. Valhalla I skipped because I heard it swung so hard on the pendulum towards that massive RPG. And then Mirage I liked better, but I still found it like they just made a smaller RPG. It wasn't like it was for me like back to the old school AC, which I think was the promise. And then Black Flag Resynced, I think, has been one of the more beloved games. I think people will generally say either 2 or Brotherhood and Black Flag are probably knocking around their favorites. And they've called it Resynced. And I think sometimes with games, we get re-releases that are sort of a remaster where you get a fresh lick of paint, a bump in resolution and frame rate, or we get like full-on remakes like you've seen with Final Fantasy VII, where it's like the game really has sort of been redone from the ground up. I think Resynced really nicely sits in that middle zone where it's not just a fresh lick of paint. They have clearly gone in, and if you go and see what they've done with the environments, if you played the previous game, they've given it so much love, and some of it's actually slightly different because they've just totally overhauled the amount of detail. Like just in like Nassau and some of the towns that you encounter, you'll see like the mesh of nets and the bushes and the trees. Like it really does feel as modern as any game does. And I think like if you're, I'm playing it on PS5, and it is just like a genuine pleasure to be in the Caribbean in the sun-soaked sun and sand. Everything that was great about Assassin's Creed Black Flag is still fantastic. You've got 1,000 islands on a map, and there's usually some sort of treasure chest or bottle that you can go and find and hunt and discover. I think what they've done to modernize it in terms of changing the way that stealth and combat works, I think is both a strength for this resynced reimagining of the game, but also ever so slightly a weakness. So As soon as I started playing, by the way, I'm about 6 hours in, so in no way sort of completed it. Yeah, it's more just sort of like my first impressions. I found the stealth and the combat encounters quite lightweight. So I don't think the game really has any interest in being remembered for these phenomenal, amazing stealth sequences. They've got rid of the sort of instant desynchronization if you get discovered. And even if you do get seen, kind of like in 007 First Light, you could sort of like fight and punch your way around those two people and not alert the whole camp, which I think is favorable. So what I think the game lacks is that really satisfying rush that you get when you would work your way slowly through a camp of enemies and you'd get that sense of satisfaction. So people who really like sort of like the flow of more traditional Assassin's Creed might be slightly disappointed. But what they've clearly done is they've added a lot more flow to the game. And you can kind of just sort of switch off a bit, enjoy, and sort of slowly push your way through without having to restart. So I think depending on what you want from Assassin's Creed, what type of stealth gamer you are, or how much, what your relationship was like with Assassin's Creed stealth in the first place, I think you'll like and enjoy it. And everything that was already great about Black Flag, the idea of like taking your ship, going around different islands, upgrading your crew, upgrading it, you know, pillaging another ship, you spy the glass there and you see, oh, they've got loads of wood and cotton, I need that for my thing. I think the story is fine. I think it's as good as the first one. I think they've just lifted that. But I kind of really like this midpoint treatment of like, it's not just a resolution bump. It's not a full remake. They've sort of gone in and given it loads of love. I would love to see them do that with Assassin's Creed 2, because that's my favorite one. I think the numbers of sales that have come out, I've done really well. So it's kind of thumbs up.
It's gone down well, because like I think James said, I know it's the one that sort of people love the, well, one of the ones they loved the most, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, is it any coincidence that the game with the Welsh protagonist is the most?
I knew this would come up.
Is it any coincidence?
His charming dulcet tones taking you through the game
of Kenway. It's the last Assassin's Creed I actually finished as well. I believe it's the last one I remember finishing. I think I got it when it because it straddled like the 360 Xbox One, and I think it probably
the
came
launch
out.
Type, well, yeah, launch for PS4.
Yeah, so I think I played it on the One. And I, the thing is with Assassin's Creed, I've never gone back. Like I really like the games that they are. I really enjoy my time with them, but I never feel like I want to go back. And like, I've played Mirage. I think Mirage was the last one I played. I played a little bit of like Origins. I didn't touch Valhalla. And like, it looks great. Like all the coverage I've seen of Resync looks amazing. I was like, yeah, great. I don't want to go back though. I don't want to go back.
I'm in the same place as Inel, James. On the surface of it, this game is so far up my street, it's parked outside my house, right? It's got aforementioned Welsh protagonist. I think the storytelling around the Kenways is really good in the overall Assassin's Creed plotline. I think that's fascinating. Mm. So you get introduced to Edward Kenway's dad, don't you, Haytham, in Assassin's Creed 3. 3 is my favourite, actually, interestingly enough.
Interesting.
Love the tree running, and I love the American Revolution setting. Mm. I thought it was really cool. So I liked it first time around. I love pirate stuff. It looks fantastic. I like Assassin's Creed. I just haven't, at the moment, I think, without dwelling too long on the I don't have loads of time to play games thing, I am up for experiencing, if I'm going to invest a lot of time in a game like this one, I want to experience something new.
Yeah,
where it moves the dial on rather than sort of reliving memories of the past. You know, if I just wanted to replay games I'd loved before, you know, there are probably others higher up in the list. You know what I mean? I wonder why should people go back to this other than, is there a reason other than, oh, this island now looks amazing? Because in my head, when I first played it, the islands looked amazing then. Do you know what I mean? Even though they didn't.
Yeah. It's kind of on my point of like the way I think you play it now and how they've modernized it. It's kind of like easy mode gaming in a way that's sort of like you're constantly moving through. It's very sort of like checkboxy, and you've got this nice gameplay loop of like, now I've upgraded this, now I'll move over here, do another mission. Oh, there's a treasure map, I go there. It's very casual, which Assassin's Creed always kind of has been, but this I think sits really nicely in, like, it's a beautiful casual reimagining of a game. I never really went, I played Assassin's Creed 4 for a bit, but never really went back like I know other people did. I did for 2 and Brotherhood. But for this, I'm like, it's kind of a game you could just sort of like passively enjoy without having to think too hard about how am I going to do this stealth sequence? What are the story implications? It's not really challenging.
That is selling it to me, Joyce. No, Glenn, the Alfresco podcasting caught us out a little bit with some signal there, but you're back with us now. The Assassin's Creed Black Flag resynced cell there from James. What do you think? Are you interested in, have you had a dabble? Are you interested in going into this?
I guess what I've got to ask is I was quite late to Assassin's Creed. My first one was Odyssey in, I think, 2018. And loved it. I think, like with a lot of Bethesda games, and with Ubisoft games rather, your favorite one is the first one you played, because they become so similar and they're so sort of reskinned. Obviously, the environments are gorgeous, but what it meant was Black Flag I didn't play until 2021. So I played it comprehensively and really enjoyed it. But as someone who only played the original one 5 years ago, do you think this is worth it for me? Or do you think this is for people who have either never played it or played it years ago when it first came out?
I think the fact that you described yourself as having played it comprehensively, I reckon your bucket is full in terms of like you jumping into your pirate simulator. Unless you were like, this was the greatest thing ever and I can't experience it again.
It was good fun. It is good fun. I see why it's a lot of people's favourite. Definitely.
I think it's for people who missed the first one and for people like me who literally played the first one the year it came out, had a good time, and have seen what they've done here and are quite impressed by it. It also is, I've sort of found it was the first one that became less of an assassin game. And I think Black Flag has always been more of a pirate simulator. And I think there was a slight trend that the longer they went on, whereas like, you know, Origins and Odyssey were less assassin, more just like you're a warrior RPG in history somewhere and that's all okay. And it's got the assassin's name on it. And I think I'm desperate for them to like go back to the core. Like you are someone in history, you discover the assassin thing.
There's a conflict in Ted.
Like, I used to always bring like back the Desmond in history
thing.
Justice for Desmond.
The way they should do this is they should have Assassin's Creed games and then they should have Assassin's Creed Presents games. And they're different things because as someone who wasn't there for the original ones, I found the modern day futuristic stuff so utterly bizarre. I think in one of them, it might be Valhalla, where it isn't until about, or it might be Odyssey, about halfway through the game, you sort of emerge from into the sort of modern day. And the game literally says to you, you can go straight back into Greece if you want. Like, you don't have to.
It's so apologetic.
And it was like, I was like, well, no, I'll see it through. I mean, you know, and it wasn't for me. But then once like Valhalla, which is a really, really good game, you had these odd, like, sort of anomalies in the sky. It was sort of like a mini game, but you were clear that like, obviously this is a simulation. This is a, you know, if you're just playing it for the Viking stuff, then that the modern day stuff just seemed a bit sort of bizarre and at odds. And I think they even need to make games that are continuing that original storyline and they flip between the modern day and the past and you have that core and it's about the assassins, or they do their presents games where it's just, hey, what if you were in Tudor England and you're just playing as someone in Tudor England and that's the whole game and it doesn't progress that storyline at all.
I think that Assassin's Creed went a bit wrong on the writing side. I think it was 3 actually, maybe, or was it Black Flag? I can't remember now. When the whole, there are different type of, there are gods that used to live on the planet and you're trying to find the artifact to stop the thing from, it's like, can we just have these group of people don't like these group of people and they're fighting each other over history. Just keep it really simple, lads. We don't need the layer of sci-fi was, I thought, unnecessary. Mm. And the same with Halo got too much. Once you're talking about previous civilizations that have been, and look, I like hardcore fantasy. You know, I'm super excited for the third Dune. I've read all the Dune books. I love Warhammer, you know, all this sort of stuff. I love all that stuff, but it just felt here unnecessary. You're complicating it, which meant the modern day storytelling, when you hopped out of really simple, I am this person who needs to kill X, really simple. I can follow that. Great. And then not only am I jumping into a new setting, which isn't as cool, but my mind's about to be fried with some, like, a layer of sci-fi that was that felt unnecessary. That's why I think the modern day stuff lost its zing.
Well, that and the split changed quite a bit, because I think the first game, it was like a 60-40 split where 60 you're in the simulation and 40 you're out. Where, and then it just slowly, they just... Now it's like 10% you're doing it, and then it's like, and then it's like 2%.
The modern stuff has always had, when they've done it the most, it's always had a fundamental pacing issue. Like you are essentially playing two stories where it's like you get really into your historical thing, and just when you're getting really in, it's like, oh, we're out now, and it's Monday, and now you've got to go and hike around and flick switches in the modern thing to get it, and then you're like, what's going on? Oh, you're back in Italy. It's like, oh, okay, that was a weird dream.
It's Helm's Deep. It's the Battle of Helm's Deep where it keeps cutting to the fucking.
But I did, you know what, like just we're slagging it off and that's fine, but I really do remember the end of Assassin's Creed 2 when it's sort of like intersecting with the modern bit, and then one of the gods like looks at the camera and it's like, you Desmond, you are this person and you have to go and do something. I was like, what, that's amazing. I didn't need that. I kind of liked it until it just sort of went on and on and on.
The mystery was better anyway. Well, look, let us know what you think of Assassin's Creed Black Flag Resynced. It's definitely on a lot of people's lists, and I think it might be a game that people might be using to tide them over before November and everybody stops and plays GTA or whatever. Metacritic score of 84, so it's gone down pretty well with the critics. You can get it for about 45 quid in different places, 50 quid on Steam. And do let us know what you think. Get in touch with us, PressXPod on Instagram and TikTok, or PressXPodcast on TikTok, or just find us and get involved, or just join the Discord. There's links on all the social media places.
And I was really glad to see that they didn't price this at I don't know, like 60 or 70 quid.
That was
remake,
good.
Like,
yeah,
two, right.
Yeah, 70 quid for this would have been a bit much, wouldn't it? Yeah. Right, okay, time for the big question then to finish off. Well, so we start to wind down this episode. Our producers scheme behind our backs, don't they? And they come up with a question based on what we've been chatting about on the show. And this week, the question is this. If Overcooked needs a "this game may be damaging to your relationship" warning, which game would benefit from a warning on the box art? And how would it best be delivered by Ray Winston's huge head? So what game would benefit from a warning on the box art?
Oh, it's got to be Football Manager. Yeah. And Ray Winston would fit Bet365. Something like that. Have to be.
Very true. Yeah.
Are we talking with regards to damaging your relationship?
Or anything. Anything. Your own life. Warning on anything.
Dark Souls has got to, any From Software game has to have a warning of like, your partner won't like who you become.
You won't like who you become.
You're going to be maidenless.
I love that series so much. And it made me angry in ways that I've never been able to articulate since, to the point where in Dark Souls 2, during lockdown, I got so frustrated that I put the controller down, went to another room and really quickly built a wardrobe. It just inspired me to. There was a wardrobe we just hadn't put together for ages. And for some reason, it was just like, well, it's wardrobe time, isn't it? Because I don't know what else to do with myself.
That's the one.
You could either break your controller or build a wardrobe.
But that's the wardrobe. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Venting your frustrations.
This is my stress relief wardrobe, and it comes with me. It's my emotional support.
Listen, I
cupboard,
you
and it goes
purpose.
With me everywhere I go.
Glenn off.
Yeah, do you want to come to my house and be angry? I've got some wardrobes and
listen, my VAT is due.
TaskRabbit is just a bunch of people who are halfway through Bloodborne.
Very good stuff. The trivia answer then. So we need to lock in some answers. So PHX Renegade in the Discord, thank you very much for your question. It's a tricky one. We like tricky questions. This is certainly that. Why is it ironic that Sijonis, the developers of the game Lemmings, were sued for their use of "How Much Is That Doggy in the Window" when they made the game's soundtrack? Why is it ironic that they were sued?
Were they not owned by Sony? And then, so I would say something like maybe Sony had the rights, so Sony suing Sony.
Okay.
Weren't they a Sony company at some point?
Could have been a Sony.
Or at least I think they got bought by Sony at one point. That's the only thing I can think of.
It must be something about copyright, but I can't figure out as to why it would be ironic that they're done for copyright.
I don't know. Everyone was doing it back then. Like, I've been playing through Snatcher, and like, there's so much.
You've been playing through Snatcher?
I play Everybody Snatcher on the Sega CD, and literally Hideo Kojima is ripping off everything in this. It's great, but like
another thing about the
rip-offs
digital releases as well. Licenses expire and things get changed, and music can't be used again. Like you've seen it with the re-releases of GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas. They get most of the music, but not all of it. Therefore, the version of that game is different to the one that was original. Versus if you bought it on PS2 back in the day, that just had all the music on it.
Correct. Was it that their owner had been the ones to instigate the law in the first place against use of music in that way?
Okay, that's a good one. And James, anyone, any guesses from you?
I've got no idea. I'm just going to go something about wagging a tail.
Yeah, I actually don't have. So let me.
Am I thinking of the right company? Is it the company that has the owl as the logo?
Sijonis. I'm not. Let's have a look.
British company, right?
Yeah, well, I assume Lemmings was British, wasn't it? The owl.
Yeah, same guy created GTA.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain Sony bought them at some point.
Okay, my guess is, I don't know, it's something about copyright. Did somebody pass away? So the copyright to Lemmings, obviously the characters die all the time.
Well, loads of Lemmings,
Yeah, so somebody passed away and the copyright ended up in someone else's hands, so then they were breach of it, something like that.
That's a good one.
Okay, the answer is, so they were sued for copyright infringement and they only used an arrangement of How Much Is That Dog? I mean, lots of them are not... Sorry, wait. They thought the song was out of copyright. The game was originally going to feature plagiarised copyrighted music such as hits from the charts and TV shows, but in the final version, before shipping, they were swapped out for public domain songs instead. How Much Of That Dog in the Window was still under copyright to Bob Merrill from 1952? I'm not fully sure I understand the answer to that question.
It doesn't feel ironic.
Doesn't feel ironic at all.
Where's the irony there?
I'm trying to work out what that's got to do with Lemmings.
Yeah. I'm trying to... Am I missing something? So they were done for copyright for the song because it was still under copyright, which is a good question. I'm not quite sure about the irony. But anyway, none of us were right because I thought the guy was dead.
Was it Sony that sued them? Or no?
Well, it doesn't say that. It does not say that. So we will say that doesn't add anything to the leaderboard because we're all wrong. So there we are. That's the end of this week's trivia.
Oh, no. I don't know. The question's a bit wild.
Yeah, that's a trick question.
Thank
you, PHX Renegade, for tricking us all into not understanding what was going on. So that is very good. I see. It's ironic because they were actively trying not to be sued by using a song that was out of copyright, but it was still under copyright. I see. Fine.
It's not ironic, they just fucked up.
They made a huge, they tried their best and they still failed.
That's
called team making a mistake.
Cock up. Big cock up from the
I was looking where I was driving. I hit a lollipop lady. It was really ironic.
Isn't it ironic? No. It's like rain on your wedding day, etc. Now, James, for people who don't know where to find you on Pulp Kitchen, where is it? Where can they find your brilliant stuff?
Yeah, we talk about films, review films every single week at Pulp Kitchen Podcast on YouTube, every single podcast platform. When we get the chance, we interview directors, actors, we go to premieres, we just try and cover films as much as we can. We're hosting a pub quiz in September, which we love doing. It's our fourth time doing them. It's all in central London on the 24th and 26th of September. If you love movie trivia, like I know you guys love game trivia, we play movie trivia at the end of every single episode. So if you fancy that and you want to assemble your mates, we've got a few tickets left, which is linked in our bio and everything. But yeah, at Pulp Kitchen Podcast for all fun film stuff.
And Glenn, I mean, you're back with us next week, so we can talk about it some more next week. But tell us more about, of course, Button Boys, if people want more gaming podcasts in their lives.
Yes, I host a comedy gaming podcast called Button Boys with fellow stand-up comedians Pia Novelli and Sarah Keyworth. And every week we just talk games and topics and gripes, what frustrates us in games. It's just very, very silly fun. So people can find me either there or you can watch a special I've got on Sky. I have a stand-up special called Will You Still Need Me? Will You Still Feed Me? Glenham 60 More, which is a title I regret every day.
So if you haven't seen Glenn, your titles are always a pun play on your name, and I think they're great. They're long, but they're fun.
That's very kind of, that's the problem. It's so long, but in any listing, in any TV guide, there's no space to actually explain what the show is.
Fantastic.
Just dot, dot, dot.
The lads are going to be back with us next week, and we're going to be back, of course, next Tuesday right here. There'll be more stuff over on the Patreon, of course, live streams, top 5 episodes, all that good stuff. But until then, have a lovely week. Go and play some Black Flag and try not to get sued for copyright infringement. See you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.